Welcome to the Eastern Shore Journal with Tom Herz, a podcast dedicated to the Eastern Shore, its traditions, and the people who live here. We all live here for our own reasons. Some of us are born here and perhaps have deep and storied roots. Some of us have come here to retire and enjoy a peaceful life. Others have come here to raise a family and achieve a balance that's hard to achieve in other mid-Atlantic areas. For me, I came here for the third reason, to achieve some level of balance. I'm a software developer and technical project manager, and I found that I was working 14 and 15-hour days on software projects with little or no quality of life. And once I found the Eastern Shore, and specifically Chestertown, I realized that I could have both my cake and eat it too. I could work on technical projects, but I could also enjoy what the Eastern Shore has to offer, which is great outdoor spaces, lovely people, and deep traditions. I'd like to share some of those conversations with you.
The Eastern Shore Journal, produced in cooperation with Hometown Multimedia.
Welcome back to Eastern Shore Journal. I'm Tom Herz. This season, we're starting at the beginning and exploring what makes life on the Eastern Shore so pleasant. My guest today is Gail Owings. She's the executive director of Eastern Shore Heritage, Inc., which is the managing entity of Stories of the Chesapeake Heritage Areas, LLC. Prior to that, she was the director of planning for Kent County, Maryland. Welcome, Gail.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you coming on. So I guess we'll begin, right? What is a heritage area? And how does that impact the Eastern Shore of Maryland?
Well, a heritage area is a place-based designation of an area that contains unique, authentic, and special resources that can be archaeological, historical, cultural, natural. There are 13 heritage areas within Maryland that are certified by the state.
Wow.
And there are a number of national heritage areas. Here on the Eastern Shore, we have three heritage areas: the Stories of the Chesapeake, mm-hmm. the heart of the Chesapeake, which is Dorchester County, and the Lower Shore Heritage Area.
Interesting. So what is Stories of the Chesapeake Heritage Areas?
The Stories of the Chesapeake serves the four counties of Caroline, Kent, Talbot, and Queen Anne's. Mm-hmm. And we were designated because we are one of the most unique and most special areas in Maryland for a lot of reasons. And our heritage area has a large number of themes, mostly all relating to how we work the land and the water and how we're affected by the Chesapeake Bay. But these include themes on African American history, colonial history, transportation, agriculture, maritime.
Wow.
Yeah, small towns, and recreation. We have it all in our four counties within the Stories of the Chesapeake.
Right on. So then, how is Stories of the Chesapeake Heritage Areas funded?
We're funded in a number of ways. Eastern Shore Heritage, Inc. is a 501c3. Mm-hmm. We receive funding from the Maryland Heritage Area Authority, which receives their funding through the program Open Space Program. Mm-hmm. That funding has to be matched, and it is matched with donations mm-hmm. from individuals and organizations. Mm-hmm. Each of the counties give us $3,000, and some of the towns also provide funding. Chestertown provides $1,000 to us every year.
Oh, wow.
So most of our funding comes from donations or fundraising.
Okay. So I noted in sort of the introduction that you have you had a long career as the director of planning for Kent County. So how does a career in planning, overlap with being the executive director of a heritage area?
Well, I think they blend very, very well, mm-hmm. particularly Kent County, where while you're planning for change and development, you're also planning for areas to be preserved, conserved, and recognizing the importance of our history mm-hmm. and our working landscapes. Mm-hmm. So I was on the founding board of Eastern Shore Heritage, Inc. and the Stories of the Chesapeake when I was the planning director.
Mm-hmm.
with the stories of the Chesapeake, I tell everybody we meet, I make people happy now. Because we provide grants and we help projects happen.
Sure.
We make projects happen in those four counties.
Uh-huh. So what are some of those projects?
You know, I just drove up from the river to get here. And as I was driving up High Street, I was counting the number of different organizations and projects that we have funded over the years.
Uh-huh.
And just... We've funded over $3 million in projects in the Heritage area total.
Wow.
And in Kent County, over $1 million, and the majority of that in Chestertown.
Is that right?
And so we've had funding in the marina building, the new marina building, the Interpretive Center,
sure.
The Sumner Hall, the Garfield, the Sultana, the new Arts Council building, just you name it.
Uh-huh.
Name a project that has occurred in Chestertown. We have been helping with the Main Street program.
Uh-huh.
We're an organization in many ways that tries to help other organizations get their projects done.
Sure. So it's safe to say that without sort of the stories of the Chesapeake Heritage areas, a lot of the things that we enjoy in Kent County and those other counties that you mentioned, but also Chestertown, may not exist, right? I mean, there would be a gap in funding that would have to be filled
right.
by someone else. Is there any funding that comes from the state relative to the stories of the Chesapeake Heritage area?
Well, because Chestertown and the four counties are within a certified heritage area, they are eligible for grants under the Maryland Heritage Area Authority.
I see.
Which is allocated $6 million a year for projects. We are right now in the grant cycle, and the Stories of the Chesapeake had 37 intent to apply for projects to occur. Statewide, there were 244 intent to applies.
Wow.
And that's the first step in the grant process.
Wow, okay.
So the Heritage Area Program has a tremendous impact.
Sure. So, you know, let's talk about that impact, right? I mean... part of the reason that I settled on this sort of theme of, you know, love of the Eastern Shore, or what makes the Eastern Shore so pleasant to live in for the first season is years and years ago, your compatriot Elizabeth Watson, who is also a guest on this podcast, had told me, you know, Tom, the Eastern Shore, and specifically Kent County as kind of a model, is sort of an unspoiled colonial landscape, right? And I sort of struggled with that, right? Because you ride around and you see telephone poles, you see sort of modern conveniences. And she's gone on to sort of help me understand that a bit more. I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit from your perspective as the director of, or the managing entity of Stories of the Chesapeake.
We are a very unique landscape, and if you think about it, there are a lot of colonial landscapes that are across the country,
sure.
or across the East Coast.
Right, and I think Williamsburg comes to mind for everybody sort of immediately, right?
Right, and that's a colonial town, which was recreated.
Sure.
But you think about where a lot of the original colonial landscapes were, and we were blessed in that the Civil War did not occur on the Eastern Shore. Which destroys a lot of the resources in the other areas.
Interesting. So, for instance, say in Northern Virginia, Antietam, so on.
Right.
Just the marching of those armies and the battles that ensued there tore down a lot of the architecture and existing resources that existed prior to those battles occurring.
That's right.
And so, that's an interesting concept, right? Because you go to Northern Virginia and you feel a very deep sense of history, but it sort of starts around the Civil War,
right?
Battlefields, you know.
And as you drive through, say the, excuse me, as you drive through the Chesapeake Country National Scenic Byway, which starts in Chesapeake City and goes to the Bay Bridge, you drive through and you see houses, farms, and much of the same landscape, albeit it may have a telephone pole in it and it has a house here or there, that Tench Tillman saw when he was riding his horse to tell the Continental Congress in Philadelphia that Cornwallis surrendered.
Interesting.
But it's very much the same landscape.
Sure.
I remember back when I was planning director, Mr. Huggins took me, and he had the farm across from White House Farm.
Okay, where?
213.
Where is, give us
kind of north of Uryville Lake.
Okay.
And we walked upstairs into a barn, and he opened up the door, and he said, you look across to White House Farm, he goes, that's the same view that people have seen for 200 years.
Interesting. It's amazing, right?
It is amazing. It's amazing.
And that's what sort of, I don't know, it's too strong to say that that after Elizabeth had told me that phrase, right, just that sort of passing comment, I kind of meditated on it a little bit. I take a drive in the morning and drink my coffee and look around. And I, you know, I'm not going to say that it was transformative, but certainly it opened my eyes to what you can very easily miss by just being caught up in the everyday of, well, these days, pandemic, right? So then there's the colonial landscape, right?
Right.
Which is where I enter. But then as I move a little bit forward through, I've read some of your literature, and obviously Elizabeth is a bit of a mentor, right, in this regard. There are also things like preservation of Sumner Hall, the Garfield Center, you mentioned those.
Right.
But even African-American schoolhouses I saw, there's scenic byways. So Stories of the Chesapeake is part of all of these projects in some way or another.
We have been part of those projects in some way or another. We've been a catalyst for some of those projects.
Mm-hmm.
We've been working with the Chesapeake Heartland Project.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while we talk about the colonial landscape, we're also the heartland of some of the African-American history, and a perfect example of the African-American history and the African-American experience in the United States is evident here. And again, it's something you see when you drive past. When you drive, you can notice, and you start to notice these things.
Exactly right. And for listeners who don't know, the Chesapeake Heartland Project is out of Washington College and the C.V. Starr Center, headed up by Adam Goodhart and Pat Nugent, along with several members of the African-American community, to catalog, capture, digitize, and share the history of the African-American community in Kent County, certainly, but
yes.
I think as broad as the Eastern Shore.
That's correct.
Pretty cool program. As an aside, they have a wonderful sort of mobile van. You can bring your documents to them.
Right, and if you noticed on the back, there's the Stories of the Chesapeake. We were part of the funding for that mobile van.
Very cool.
Yes.
Very cool. So then going back to some of the more sort of physical, right? So the scenic byways and preservation of sort of landscape and view. Do you find that there's any tension between development, economic development, and maintaining a heritage area?
Not at all.
Really?
Not at all. Heritage areas at their heart are economic development tools.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit more about that.
Heritage areas bring tourists.
Mm-hmm.
Tourists bring their money and they leave. and when you have authentic experiences like we have here on the Stories of the Chesapeake,
mm-hmm.
more people will come. The type of people that enjoy authentic cultural experiences are people that tend to stay longer and spend more.
Uh-huh.
So they support your restaurants, they support your B&Bs, they support your theaters, they support your downtowns, they support all the different things that make our community special.
Sure.
So it's actually a perfect meld of preservation and economic development.
Got it. But one of the criticisms that I will often hear, right, and this may be from people who aren't thinking about the whole board,
right?
They might just be coming with a certain point of view or a certain just mindset from the way they were raised or whatever it is. But does it stop development of, you know, large buildings, or bringing businesses to town or to the county in town, or does it make it more difficult for businesses to land themselves here and bring jobs?
Not at all. Being designated a heritage area does not bring any regulation along with it.
I see.
It does give us the ability to comment on some projects, only very, very large projects at a state level. We do not get involved in local zoning issues mm-hmm. at all.
I see.
And that's just not something that we do.
I see.
We are here to help make projects happen.
And if I understand it correctly, sort of be an expert voice on our history and our heritage and what exists and what we could lose
yes.
if proper decisions aren't made or proper thought isn't given.
What we would like to be considered is a trusted resource
for
historic preservation and cultural preservation. And that doesn't mean pickling it and you can't change it. It can be just as simple as the phone call I had yesterday from the old Y Mill, mm-hmm. where someone had very rudely parked their abandoned boat in their parking lot, and they were trying to figure out how to get rid of it. So they called us.
Okay.
Called us and said, you know, do you have an idea who we should call and what we should do?
Yeah.
We think of ourselves as a trusted resource. We do workshops, and when COVID hit, and it was sort of a coincidence, but it was perfect timing.
Uh-huh.
We were going to do a in-person workshop on virtual tours, virtual exhibits, and it turned out, because of COVID, we ended up doing a virtual series of Zoom meetings, first on how to do your website, because you can't have a virtual tour unless you have a strong website.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next one was how to do a virtual exhibit and what tools you needed to have.
Interesting.
And then the next one was how to take your exhibits and turn them into a virtual tour so that people could visit your site
uh-huh.
without having to physically be there.
Interesting. Can you give an example of how that's unfolding, you know, concretely?
Sure. The Betterton Museum.
Okay.
If you go to the Betterton Museum website, you can walk through the Betterton Museum virtually. And that Washington College has been doing that.
Interesting.
They will be doing that with the African American Schoolhouse.
Interesting.
Interestingly enough, we had people from all over the world that sat in on these Zoom meetings because just timing-wise, it was perfect. But we tend to have a lot of workshops. We've had a workshop on finding and retaining your volunteers. We've had workshops on grant writing. We have workshops, we call it Beyond the Ramp. It's on accessibility. And everybody knows you have to have the ramp.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a workshop that talks about not so much what you need for people with disabilities, but as we all get older, we all have aging eyes. Mm-hmm. So it talks about what sort of fonts you should use.
I see.
And a simple thing of making sure you have chairs in your museum mm-hmm. so people can sit down and rest.
Interesting. So then, and that was called Beyond the Ramp?
Beyond the Ramp, yes.
And so it's beyond just the preservation of heritage objects, landscape and,
right.
and schoolhouses, but also how you get to them and then how you ultimately enjoy them.
That's right. And you know, part of our funding goes to creating physical buildings, like mm-hmm. like the Holt Center,
mm-hmm.
or...
And what is the Holt Center?
At the Sultana.
Ah, okay.
The Sultana building.
Uh-huh.
Or the restoration of the GAR
uh-huh.
Hall, Sumner Hall. A lot of our funding goes to creating exhibits or projects. The Museum on Main Street, which is a Maryland Humanities or National Humanities program with the Smithsonian.
Mm-hmm.
We have partnered with them over the last 4 years
mm-hmm.
on as they bring their exhibits to different places.
When you say Museum on Main Street, tell me where that is.
Well, in this case, the next Museum on Main Street will be in Queen Anne's County.
Okay.
And the theme is voters and democracy.
Got it. So that's a mobile?
It is a mobile exhibit. And what happens? The Smithsonian brings their exhibit mm-hmm. to your site.
Uh-huh.
And Sumner Hall had the exhibit The Way We Work a couple of years ago.
That's right.
And it had sort of the national way we worked. And then the Smithsonian brings their expertise to help local museums develop local exhibits on their local history.
Uh-huh.
And that's where we come in. We help fund those local exhibits.
Fascinating. That's wonderful. So, okay. We are in a pandemic, right?
Yes.
Which, I mean, I think limits everyone's enjoyment, really, of everything. Just sort of gears everybody down a little bit,
right?
Unfortunately. But, you know, what are some of the, you know, if I were to have come here, say, from New York, right,
mm-hmm.
And I'm staying here long term, or I've bought a house here and I'm new, what are sort of some pandemic safe activities that I could take my family to, or I could go explore and you know, feel certain that I'd be, you know, at least socially distanced, but maybe even alone at the area. Can you give us some ideas of, you know, if you want to get started in heritage areas, right?
Well,
or you want to get started.
There are a couple of things you could do. Well, mm-hmm. First, you could just stay at home and do your virtual tours.
That's right, of course.
And do your virtual tours and then decide, I love the Betterton Museum. I want to go learn more about Betterton.
Yeah.
So you could go to Betterton, then you stop at Turner's Creek, which has an amazing history of its
mm-hmm.
own.
Mm-hmm.
And there's usually not a lot of people there
mm-hmm.
on walking through Bloomfield. We are blessed here in the stories of the Chesapeake of having very historic, large places to go hike,
mm-hmm.
Whether it's part local parks, Atkins Arboretum in Caroline County,
mm-hmm.
The Frederick Douglass Park on the Tuckahoe, where you can walk through and there are interpretive panels that tell you a little bit about Frederick Douglass's history.
Interesting.
But one of the things you could start doing are just with our scenic byways. You could take the Chesapeake Country Scenic Byways. There are interpretive panels that you can stop
mm-hmm.
and read, so you'll be by yourself, you'll be outdoors,
mm-hmm.
and you learn a little history. You can get on the Cross Island Trail and hike, and again, there's interpretive panels where you can read. And then there's the Underground Railroad National Scenic Byway, which sort of runs down in Dorchester and into Caroline County. And when you get to the Leverton House,
mm-hmm.
you can get on your phone and hit, I guess it's a QR code, and up will pop what the Leverton House may have looked like at the time when Harriet Tubman was escaping, and it was a safe house.
Wow.
And it talks a little bit about the history of that. But all of these places have interpretive panels outside that you can read, and it gives you just a little glimpse of our history.
That's fascinating. Well, Gail, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
This has been an incredible exploration of heritage areas, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
If people wanted to get more information or reach out and contact Stories of the Chesapeake mm-hmm. or you, how could they get in touch?
Sure. They can call me at 410-778-1460.
Okay.
They can email at info@storiesofthechesapeake.org, or they can visit our website, storiesofthechesapeake.org.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Eastern Shore Journal, produced in cooperation with Hometown Multimedia.
Thank you for joining us today. I would like to thank Brian Moore and Leslie C. at WCTR for their help and support in creating this podcast, and offer special thanks to Pat Haley, my producer, for all of his hard work getting these episodes published to you. The views presented here are my own.